The following is a rebroadcast of Studio Tulsa. This program first aired last year.
Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In Simon Hahn's debut novel, Nights When Nothing Happened, the Cheng family seems to be pursuing an immigrant's dream in Plano, Texas. Patty has immigrated to America from China, first as a doctoral student in Texas. She sends for her husband, Liang, a photographer. When her grant funding dries up, and so does the doctorate, she lands on her feet in Texas's high-tech sector and feels secure enough to have a second child and also send for their older boy, Jack, who has been living in Tianjin with grandparents. But as the novel opens, Annabelle, the youngest, is sleepwalking. Jack is still learning how to bond with his family. Patty's working long hours at her job, and Liang is unhappy at being both caregiver and a portrait studio manager. It soon becomes apparent this family doesn't really understand each other. And when an incident occurs at their home, not only threatens the stability of the family, but the family's security within their own community. Simon Hahn was a Tulsa Artist Fellow and visiting professor of creative writing at the University of Tulsa while working on this novel, his first. He's a Texas resident who was an immigrant from China himself. His writing has appeared in The Atlantic, Texas Monthly, The Iowa Review, and Lit Hub. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Simon Hahn, it's a great delight to finally have you on Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rich.
Nights When Nothing Happened is a story of an immigrant family working to achieve the American dream, but I have to ask, to what end? As the story unfolds, it seems like the reader has a better sense of the Cheng family than they do of themselves. Tell us a little bit about this family and why you wanted to write about them.
Yeah, I think the Cheng family at the center of the novel, they are trying to achieve the American dream, but the American dream itself, you know, is sort of, I mean, the word dream within the phrase American dream implies a kind of illusion or non-reality or something or adjacent reality that the family themselves aren't quite aware of. And so what they don't realize is they're grasping for something that doesn't really exist. They're grasping for a kind of aspiration. So much of what they're trying to do is kind of operate in that space where they're trying to be the model versions of themselves, trying to be what society expects them to be. They're trying to be the husband and wife and son and daughter that a particular kind of white American narrative holds up as a kind of model family. So through the course of the novel, they realize that all of these things are kind of constructions and things begin to fall apart.
Is that same model at play where they came from China? This super achievement, we hear about it a lot now. You know, Americans hear about it, about the Chinese success story as being a serious part of their being now. But is that a part of where they came from?
Well, I think that's maybe in a way. I think that story also is, you know, a kind of marketing pitch, right? It's a way of elevating this Chinese-American family to be a kind of model minority based on some kind of ambiguous cultural value of that holds up kind of education or success, economic success, that kind of thing. But China, like America, is an incredibly vast and complicated and really unknowable place. You have characters like Patty, the mother in the novel, who really buys into that, like achieving success in school, you know, ignoring, for example, the kinds of conflicts and sort of changes in attitude that occurred during the Tiananmen Square, you know, protests, and really focusing on being at the top of her class and just moving forward always. But then you have someone like Liang, her husband and the father in the family, who came from more humble roots and has never found really a home in China or America or in that kind of story of success. And so it doesn't really make sense to him. And so he's sort of unmoored and disoriented throughout that whole experience of immigration as well.
And if he was somewhat unmoored in his home country, he's even more unmoored here in the United States. which is totally judged by success. Success is a major judge of who you are and who your character, your whole identity.
Yeah, and I think that pressure is especially prevalent for his family because they also live in a city. I mean, Plano, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. The motto of the city is the city of excellence, right? there is a very single aspirational story of the city. I grew up in it, and I bought into it myself. And the questions that I began to ask after leaving are, you know, what happens when you fall outside of that single aspirational story? What if your definition of success is different from what you're being told success looks like? And for Liang, it's not just on a sort of level of career advancement and stuff like that, although his career as a photographer isn't going well. It's also, you know, what does it mean to be a successful father and husband? And he can't locate himself in that story either because he feels like he's lacking there as well.
How important is Plano? You know, it is the setting of the novel, but how important is it to the story of the novel? You know, the whole, I think you've had interviews where people say, you know, Plano is the place where nothing happens. you know, sort of play on the title. And, you know, frankly, when you drive through Plano, it's hard to see where the previous suburb begins and where Plano begins and where it ends and where Dallas, North Dallas begins. It's sort of a city without an identity, much like this family is struggling to find a family identity.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that Plano is becoming more city-like in a way, and there's actually recently been a lot of resistance to that because a lot of residents in Plano want to keep their quote-unquote suburban identity, whatever that means. But it's a place where I think growing up there, and at least for me, I couldn't wait to get away. But after I did, I began to see it in a different light, right? Like, for example, I never really thought that deeply about my Asianness and all the layers of what being Asian meant until I left the huge Asian immigrant communities in Plano. I began to see how this huge community was largely invisible in the larger national narratives, and if they were talked about, like the Asian communities in Texas or the suburbs, they were sort of treated as a monolith. And so that's where Plano and the specific communities that I grew up around became important to me. I had to make the decision at some point in the novel, like, do I just make up a fictional suburb or do I make it Plano? Do I make it super specific, someplace you can search for on Wikipedia? And I went the latter route because I think there is a uniqueness to the city that is important to the characters and to the story.
You know, it's interesting, you know, when you think of a place like Plano, you know, at one point it was the new suburb, but as these metroplexes continue to grow, you know, the next one out is the new suburb, and then the next one out beyond that is the new one. And it's interesting how that identity of what Plano is or other mm-hmm. suburbs like it change over time. But this is a specific point in time that you're writing about, the early 2000s, as we meet Jack, who is our first narrator, the son who actually was left behind in China when first the mother and then the rest, Liang joined Patty in the United States. He was left with his grandparents and eventually sent for. And so he has this really interesting role at the first. We think he's going to be the narrator for the whole story as he sort of has this. He's been away from the family and then he comes back to it. So he has this sort of outside view of the family. But as we meet him, you know, he's going through active shooter drills. You've given us this very specific in time and place for Jack as we first meet him.
Yeah, I did. So the novel started as a short story actually. And it was only, the story was all in Jack's point of view. And I think I started with his point of view, partly for the reason that you mentioned, because he is an outsider, not just to the country, not just to the state or the city, but to his own family. Like, he had to meet his own parents again, you know, and when he met his parents, they were essentially strangers to him. And I was really interested in what that would feel like. It's something that a lot of children of immigrants go through. And yeah, so I wanted to explore like this dynamic of being an insider and outsider, not just like out in the community, but within inside the house, that you could have these spaces where you feel alienated and lonely. But because he is an outsider, he does have this like unique vantage point into the various dynamics with, you know, between each of his family members. And like he's growing up in a scary time, like his sister Annabelle, he's an imaginative child, but it's also a time where I think children's imaginations were expanding and they could imagine a world that was deeply scary and more frightening than they had conceived of before, when you were told in school to hide under desks during active shooter drills, when you turn on the TV and there's like the latest update on the Catholic Church scandals, you know, when you're told that you can open up the mailbox and get anthrax, whatever that means to a kid, right? So, yeah, I wanted to capture that in the novel.
It's really interesting that he comes from a city, Tianjin, where he felt far less danger than he does here in the home of the American dream, Plano, Texas, which is actually probably safety conscious. It's all about safety in home, school, everywhere.
Yeah, I think that's the idea of safety is like the idea of the American dream. It really depends on your perspective, right? If you are someone who is the audience, right? When you have a kind of warning, a neighborhood association that like issues a warning about crime in the area, like who are these warnings for? They're for the people that are already accepted into the community. They're for the people that, mm-hmm. you know, fall under that kind of model identity of a you know, civil and quiet suburbanite. That doesn't describe this family, or at least it doesn't describe this family as the novel progresses. And so they kind of find themselves falling outside of these ideas of safety. They themselves become a kind of danger to their neighbors. And that's when just the whole idea of safety and security is kind of upended.
Well, at the beginning of the book, you know, Jack is, he is our narrator and he's our guide to this family. And you see him as having to be a protector as well as an observer, because his younger sister, Annabelle, sleepwalks. And, mm-hmm. you know, she's first walking around the house, and then he's actually having to follow her out into the streets in the middle of the night and find her, which is a really interesting perspective. And I guess this is where the short story began, that eventually became the novel?
It did, yeah. Sleepwalking was definitely there in the beginning. I didn't really know what to do with it. I just, to be honest, I thought it was just kind of cool to write about. There was just something there that interested me. I'm not a sleepwalker myself, but you know, members of my family were, and it's very odd, right? And the more I thought about it, I think it's just the fact that sleepwalking is so mysterious even now, even to the people who study it. It's not the space of the unconscious. It's hard to understand. And as a fiction writer, when I encounter something that is unknowable, I just sort of gravitate towards that. And the novel itself is interested in these kinds of spaces of not knowing, right? Like, I wanted to explore how people respond to that discomfort, this like unsettling feeling of not knowing where you are, who you are, or in the case of the Changs, you know, who your own family is.
My guest today is Simon Hahn, a fiction writer. He's was a Tulsa Artist Fellowship recipient, and his first novel is out. It's titled Nights When Nothing Happened. It's published by Riverhead. It's getting great reviews, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. And it was really this interesting story of the Cheng family trying to find themselves at the same time they're trying to discover the American dream. And in turn, you know, we begin this story with the story of night walking Annabelle, who wants to sleep with her parents. She's 4, 5, 6 years old, still wanting to sleep with the parents. Jack is observing this as a relatively newcomer to the family and as we read through the book, we find that this family really doesn't know themselves, know each other. And in turn, we hear from each member of the family, first Jack, then Patty, Annabelle, and Leong. And this is a family that's absolutely unmoored from one another.
Yeah, I think that that was the point in the novel that was the scariest to write, right? Because I think when we think of family or we think of home, we want to think of it as a place of comfort, or a place where we can sort of feel comfort in knowing that they are people that we can trust and who we can assume the best of intentions and whose love just comes with the territory of being a family. But what is, I think, harder to unpack is what happens when there are aspects of these people who you love who are also unknowable to you. What happens when you find yourself hurt by the people you love the most? And so that's I think, where the novel kind of felt more urgent to me.
Yeah. Leong is being, you know, from Patty's perspective, Leong's being very needy. He's sort of the caregiver because she's working long hours at Texas Semiconductor. She's working long hours, and she makes them even longer because she can't really come back and face the family. She has an evening where she just sits in her car for 3 hours watching the apartment complexes and sort of not really even doing much of anything, just sort of letting her mind idle, if you will. It was a really interesting passage that you wrote there. Leong is, you know, he has some interesting traumas of himself, and Annabelle, who is a really interesting character, because at first she's, to be quite honest, you feel very sympathetic. She's sleepwalking. She has, and obviously there's some issues of safety, it seems like, at first. And then we begin to understand that it's more of control. She is an interesting, complex little character.
Yeah. I really enjoyed writing her for those reasons. I think that we tend to take children for granted in life, but especially in fiction, where sometimes children are either, you know, very one note, either like just super cutesy and pure, or they're kind of like a writer friend of mine called them like oracular, like somehow able, like wise beyond their years. And with Annabelle, I was able, like, I really enjoyed writing her because she could be as complex as any adult. She could have large adult-sized feelings, but she could be capable of also things that are a little bit unsympathetic. I think that just felt more real to me. Like, we sometimes don't think the best of children. I think we should give children the freedom to sometimes mess up and do things that, you know, don't reflect super well on them.
Hmm. And of course, there's a moment in the novel where everything changes for the Cheng family. And without giving too much away, it also exposes the fragility of their situation in their community. Hmm. And this was, I assume this was very important for you to write about.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying about the blurred lines between what it means to belong and not belong, and what is safe and what is dangerous. I think that I wanted to talk about the sort of system that everyone living in Plano is sort of has to have some kind of relationship with. If you kind of represent the kind of model suburbanite who doesn't ruffle any feathers and plays the game, right? Like, then you are the one who sort of is not seen as a threat or anything like that. You are the one who is, you know, you're the one who is given warnings about the threats out there. But for the Cheng, there is this flip at some point where they realize that they kind of are now existing on the margins of this system. And maybe what I wanted to explore was just not just the fragility of their place, but just how kind of broken the whole narrative of suburbia can be, or the whole narrative of a kind of American belonging can be, that it's so subject to a kind of idealized version of what an American is. And at some point, the chains don't fall under that.
It's interesting. In this last presidential election, we heard a lot about what the suburbs mean and what the suburbs should be. That seems, you know, when people heard this, a lot of people said, this is a really detached view from what the suburbs really are today. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the suburbs, they don't represent how they were often talked about during the election cycle. I mean, they are the place of the highest, like, immigrant growth right now. Plano, Texas has 25% Asian Americans, for example. It's also a place, you know, as we talked about, where, like, the lines between a suburb and city are changing. There's growing income inequality in the suburbs. There's this kind of experience of, like, initially white flight to the suburbs, but now as, for example, the immigrant population, like, explodes in the suburbs, we have, like, white flight going back to the cities, then pushing people out of the cities back to the suburbs. I mean, it's just really messy. And obviously, during a political election cycle, the messy stories aren't the kinds of stories that politicians like to tell. But our country is messy, the suburbs are messy, and we have to be able to see that. And even though this book is set in the early 2000s, it was messy even then.
As you're finishing up this book and all of a sudden the suburbs, I mean, at this point, the book is at the publisher, and all of a sudden you're hearing this sort of antiquated notion of, you know, from, you know, maybe the early 50s of what a suburb is being touted as the ideal of a suburb. What were you thinking? What was going through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it all just felt like a kind of like a sneaky salesperson pitch or something, right? There was such like an agenda behind all the discussions about the suburbs, and I think at the end of the day, as a fiction writer, I kind of am trying to do the opposite of that. Like, I'm trying to essentially, like, make up a story, but, like, through that act of making up a story, get at a messier kind of truth. And writing about the suburbs is always interesting because you have this impulse to sort of rely on the tropes and the stereotypes. But that just wasn't my experience of the suburbs. It also just does not reflect reality. And so in fiction, I felt this freedom to, like, introduce more questions rather than answers. And these are questions about, like, where the suburbs are going. What does it mean? You know, these are questions that we're going to be asking for a long time, whether we want to or not. I mean, I do realize that talking about the suburbs is sometimes, like, feels like deeply uncool or something, you know. I kind of get why people just want to talk about something or anything else. But for better or for worse, this is where so much of over, I think, 50% of America resides in the suburbs. Like, we have to be able to see it clearly.
My guest today is Simon Hahn, a fiction writer, a former Tulsa Artist Fellowship recipient, and his first novel is out. It's titled Nights When Nothing Happened. It's published by Riverhead. And Simon, I have to ask you about the title, because there's a quote where a night when nothing happened. But, you know, what were you thinking about this story when you decided to title it that?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to write about the small moments of connection and disconnection in a family, right? Like, there's a scene where, you know, a father and son sit by a pond and they pretend to fish so they don't have to talk to each other. Or a mother looking, you know, at her daughter throwing a tantrum and she get really into her head and she loves this girl so much, but she also, like, simultaneously wants to slap her across the face, right? Like, these are little moments in life that, to me, they're not nothing. Like, I think that they might be skipped over, but to me, they're everything. And to these characters, they're everything. And I wanted to explore these missed moments of connection. And I wanted that sort of domestic space to gain a new meaning. And so the title is kind of playful, because obviously, in my mind, there is always something happening. It's just a matter of perspective.
It's very interesting, that latter scene you describe, where Annabelle flips a Fruit Loop into Patty's hair. You know, I mean, we've all experienced that as parents at some point, and we hopefully keep control. But hearing her thought processes going on, I really want to slap this girl right now, but I don't, that's not who I am. And that's, you know, but that's what my grandmother would have done. That's what my mother would have done. You know, you just hear this internal dialogue going on, and it's like, you've got to stop this behavior.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that that's kind of freeing in a way for a reader, because who hasn't thought things that we, you know, would rather keep to ourselves, you know, and who hasn't thought things that we regret, right?
Right.
This is just, like, my hope is that by allowing readers inside these muddled, kind of messy thoughts, that they'll be able to feel maybe better about the fact that we all do this.
There's also one last question that has to do with the characters, especially the parent characters, this sort of tight control on themselves. I'm wondering if that is from being an outsider in a society. Do you understand what I'm sort of saying?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's sort of this control that my parents would have slapped me if I had done that in China, but I'm here in America and I'm an outsider. I've got to sort of keep control of myself. You know, I'm not sure if that's exactly what you meant, but there's just sort of this sense that because I'm an outsider, I can't lose control.
Right, right.
Was that something you really wanted to portray?
I think so. I think the freedom to be spontaneous, the freedom to be reckless, that's a privilege, right? That's a privilege that's granted to people who, if they were to do that kind of thing, people would still sort of assume the best of them. For the Changs, that's not the case. They know that if they were to lash out, that the kind of assumptions or the interpretations that would be made would put their family in peril. So it's that control is, I think, necessary as a kind of survival mechanism for them. But it is absolutely related to their status as outsiders.
And again, there's the first generation, a second generation, where the next generation feels that a little more of that freedom too, which mm-hmm. becomes apparent in the novel.
Yeah, I mean, Annabelle is a prime example of that, right? She doesn't feel that pressure to assimilate and this kind of civil, quiet resident of Plano. And maybe that's because of her age. Maybe it's because she was born in America, unlike the rest of her family. But she is the kind of character who forces everyone else to accommodate her. And that's what that's one reason I really loved her as a character. But to have that kind of freedom, also, there are potential risks. And so the novel explores that as well.
Yes, it does. The name of the novel is Nights When Nothing Happened. Simon, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, this is fun. Thank you, Rich.
Fiction writer Simon Hahn speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The former Tulsa Artist Fellow is the author of his first novel, Nights When Nothing Happened, published by Riverhead. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.